Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, QT Votes with you on another Sunday afternoon. Sign Guy is on the holy grail of wrestling assignments. He is at WrestleMania in New Orleans, so I will be in singles competition today. Show notes. Now you know this is Sign Guy's specialty, much like the field of aerodynamics was to the character Lamar on Revenge of the Nerds. That's why Lamar was such a good javelin thrower with his limp-wristed delivery. Now, Sign Guy might not be a great javelin thrower, but he would want me to pass on that blue-collar wrestling will be held at the North Portland Eagles this evening. And Patty, co-owner of BCW, I'm sorry that we missed you on Friday, but hopefully you were swamped at your restaurant, Patty's home plate. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome back to our show my good friend and Renaissance man about town in Olympia, Washington, Charlie Mercury Sable. Charlie, welcome, and I hope you like your new nickname that our Turnbuckle Turmoil fans overwhelmingly supported.
Well, I appreciate being here, and I do like the name. It's growing on me. I'm kind of, I haven't gotten, Jill, my wife, to call me that yet. But, I'll work on it and, see if she can adapt to it. And once she starts calling me that, then it'll be official.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I got a couple, in QT, I've got to, I know you got go by several names too, so. We'll try to keep the name straight today,
Well, okay.
But for now, you're QT Volks. And I'm honored to hear you calling me a friend. I feel like we have been friends for quite a while. And thanks for all your support and everything.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. Okay. Well, Charlie, we usually start out the show with our standard question. How did you get started in this crazy wrestling business? However, you have neither set foot in the squared circle or managed anyone, but my wrestling sources in Shelton, Washington, inform me that you're a big fan of WWE Hall of Famer and Portland wrestling star of the 1970s, Roddy Piper, who also starred in the movie They Live. And he also had an appearance in the sitcom It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Are my wrestling sources from Shelton, Washington correct?
I can't validate that last, the Sunny in Philadelphia one, but I know he made a cameo appearance in another movie, The One and Only with Henry Winkler. And he was younger then. We were looking, and I thought that was him. And then my wife noticed he's wearing, plaid shorts. And that was it. We knew it was Roddy. But We used to live in Portland when we were first married, near the arena, and sadly we didn't go in to see him, but when we went to the flea market that was there and everything, there was always, we were always greeted with a life-size, at least, wooden figure of Andre the Giant, you know, and that was there. That was in the 80s.
Early
80s? Yeah. No, it was mid-80s, you know, mid-80s. Actually, later 80s. It was still there. Wait a minute. 70s, 80s. No, it was the 70s. You're right. It was in the late 70s. That's right. See, Dan, you got to keep me on track here. You're doing it so far. I can see why you've been on this show for, you know, however many episodes, 1,200 episodes. You know, you keep the guest on their toes. That's appreciated by everybody. By the way, I wanted to say hi to a couple people, you know, who might be listening. Bill out there, our mutual friend, and Sandy might be listening too, you know, from maybe around the corner. You know, she may not, you know, be quite as upfront about listening to Turnbuckle Turmoil, but I have a feeling that she listens to it, you know, on the QT. Yeah, you got to get it on the QT.
On the down
sorry.
Level, yes.
Yeah. But you know, you mentioned Roddy Piper. I'm a kind of a sci-fi fan, and I like that movie, They Live, so much, and I had such respect for Roddy Piper, and I'm really saddened that he died, you know, in the last couple of years. And so he was so good in that movie. He carried that movie. It wasn't just that he was good in the fight scene or good, but I mean, John Carpenter, you know, a brilliant director, was smart enough to let him run, you know, let him go, just follow him around with the camera, and he was great. I mean, he had a lot of range of, and then of course when it came to the fight scene with Keith David, you know, that was a record-breaking fight scene, which they set out to do. They wanted to have the longest fight scene on cinema to break John Wayne's record, and they did that with 6 minutes and something. So, but really, his when Roddy Piper sadly passed away, John Carpenter said that he was an underrated actor, and he was a fine actor, but he was just, and I think it was because he was such a, you know, edgy human being. I mean, gosh, when you look at him in those interviews and Piper's Pit and everything, I mean, you're always watching him to see what's he going to do next. So yeah, that made me, that got me interested more in professional wrestling. My amateur wrestling career was cut short when Bob Porsche pinned me in gym in high school. And he was an actual wrestler, and I did other sports, so that's my excuse anyway. So you know, yeah, you're right on all counts, QT. You got me. You got my number.
Well, Charlie, you know, in that movie, I Live, Roddy Piper, or They Live. Roddy Piper issued a famous slogan or phrase in that movie. Do you recall what that phrase was?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've come here to kick ass and chew bubble gum. And I'm all out of bubble gum. And right at that moment.
Very good. Wow.
Well,
very good.
And I read that he ad-libbed that. That
wow.
In one place said that that was an ad lib, and I mean that's as you know that helped make that movie a success, you know. But he had other funny. He had some other great lines in that movie, you know. The aliens, I think he called one of them formaldehyde face, and you know, it's if you haven't seen it, it's a real kick. But it has John Carpenter himself did the music to it, and he play. It's kind of a surfy, kind of slow surfy kind of guitar background sound, and it's well worth checking out again. I'm watching it again, you know, since it's been a few years.
Now, wasn't there a musician named Dick Dale back in the 60s that did a song called Wipeout or Surf's Up? Dick Dale.
Dick Dale was the, you know, kind of the godfather of surf music, I believe. And, you know, he was before the Ventures and, of course, the Beach Boys and who were, and Jan and Dean and, you know, he was before them, and he did all instrumentals, which went really well with the times in the early 60s. Instrumental rock was really a big deal then. And up here in the Northwest, we had great bands then. You know, we were lucky to be able to hear these great bands like the Wailers and the Sonics later and the Viceroys and, Counts and Dave Lewis and but Dick Dale's guitar sound was just fantastic. Let's see, now there was another guitar player who did Rumble. I'm trying to think his name. Really well known, probably even better known than Dick Dale, but I'm sure they all influenced each other. They had that kind of tremolo low guitar string sound. That's a big influence on music and musicians everywhere, I think, you know.
Well, I think the person that did Rumble, now I'm probably got this wrong, but his name sounded like Rick Ray. Rick Ray, I think.
Oh, yeah. Link Ray.
Link Ray, yes. Yes.
Yeah, Link Ray. And there's somebody else too that was here, I'll look it up. You know, everybody's an expert now that we have the internet. I'll just look it up so you know to save everybody the trouble here. Another new window. What the heck? Yeah, Rumble.
Yes.
Song.
Link Ray had a big effect on the Who's Pete.
It's Link Ray. You're right. It's totally Link Ray. I was thinking of somebody. Yeah. What a great, great tune.
Yeah. It was all instrumental.
Yeah. 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 Here's a really raw sound, you know. I mean, how basic can you get?
Yeah.
It makes you just want to walk like that, you know? And you heard how he bent that note at the end, you know, it was great, great stuff. But,
Wow. Yeah,
that was all going on back then, you know, there was, you know, other groups like the Dynamics, you know, Nancy Clair and just, you know, a real rich scene back then. But getting back to the wrestling, I noticed that you have a pretty nice introductory song. Is it something about Suicide Blonde or something like that? Is that the name of your introductory music?
Boy, I don't know, Charlie. We have so many. We have like about 10 tracks, 10 or 12 tracks that we can choose from. Most of the time, it automatically will automatically set up our opening song. Like today, I didn't know that song was going to come on. But if I didn't want that song, I could click on any other number of songs, like the Beast Barnett Power Party or Ariana Bye Bye. I got Can't Hang and Chains for JoJo. I got a number of them. It's on our switchboard. Yes.
Wow. Well, you know, I think the continuity of your show, and I know you miss Sign Guy right now, and he's your partner in crime here, but he'll have stories to tell when he comes back. But the continuity in all the shows and the people that have called in and the people that have interviewed with you, you know, I've become a kind of a fan of some of those people, you know, since I've been listening to your show. Like, for instance, Randy Zellers, you know, I'm a fan of his now. I listened to him on your show. He was a really upbeat guy, and he's pretty sharp. He's got a lot of energy, but I was just, you know, what really blew me away though was when I saw that he had a bout with The Tower. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with that bout. It may have been a while ago. And The Tower was just, I mean, you've heard about people that are a head taller. Well, this guy was head and shoulders taller, probably midriff and head, you know, taller and big. And for a while, Randy was just, you know, he'd run up and just smash into him. And The Tower wouldn't even move. And then somehow Zellers knocked The Tower out of the ring. And I was really impressed, you know. He won the match because of that. And that was so there's things like that. I mean, I think the continuity, people know they can go to Turnbuckle Turmoil and get, you know, Northwest Wrestling information, you know, that it's there, you know, you can depend on it. And it's a really good thing that you guys are doing here. And also the fact that we, the two of us, went to the brawl to end it all up at BNI, you know. I mean, what an experience for me, you know, to go see that.
Well, now, Charlie, wrestling has always appealed to America. Back in the 1950s, early 1950s, when television was coming about, people, of course, didn't have a television in every household. A lot of times they'd have to go to department store windows to view this new invention, TV. And one of the most popular things that you could see on TV at that time was when wrestling would come on. Some people, sometimes in Los Angeles, outside a department store, when people would line up six deep on the sidewalk to watch wrestling. And I think wrestling appealed to the common person because wrestling represents the duality of man. Sometimes it's good against evil, you know. I think wrestling is the purest form of blue-collar work ethic in the United States. That's my original quote about wrestling. You know, sometimes you'll see a commoner, if you will, go up against a blue blood, like what they call in England, the rich aristocrat. You know, you got a blue collar. It's like a worker going up against his boss. Sometimes that represents the American condition. Sometimes it's good against bad, but a lot of times, you know, you've got tweeners, what's called tweeners, neither good nor bad. Yes. Now, when you
there was
and I,
a, yeah.
When you and I
yeah,
went
go
to
ahead.
B&I, we did see the lovely Lila Lodge in action, and one of your homework assignments that you were given was to view a YouTube video I sent of the lovely Lila Lodge in action. Did you see this video, and most importantly, did this bring back memories of the powerhouse princess that I introduced you to at B&I?
Yes, it did, and that's, I mentioned that I'm a fan now, you know, of some of the people that, you know, and the fact that she's from Olympia, Washington, you know, lovely Lila Lodge, if you're out there, we appreciate you, you know, you've really put Olympia on the map, and I saw some great stuff on YouTube with her, and we saw her live, and I met her live. I got to shake hands with her. She was very, she loves her fans, you know, and so she was awfully nice, very gracious, you know, to meet a non-wrestler down there. But I saw her recently, and I was, on a YouTube. And she, unfortunately, Sunny Day took her back in 2009, took her championship belt away from her. And I mean, in that match, I meant to ask you about this. I felt that the ref, the count was a little quick on that one. And I didn't really know whether she, you know, usually people have a time to get their shoulders off the mat, and I didn't feel like she had adequate time. But then, you know, I saw her against Viola and the Peacock, you know, and that was a more recent match, and she was just dominating the ring in that match. For sure. So wrestlers, they all have their ups and downs. And I just got a message that my buddy, another listener in there, Dick Metcalf, aka Rotcod Zadge, is listening. Hi out there. And so we got Dick, we got Bill out there, probably Sandy, you know. And other people, I put it on my Facebook too that we're on air together. So this is kind of a party. We're having fun here, and glad other people are joining in. And I want to talk about Dick's a little later. I'll talk about all the things that Zadge, as we call him, is into. You know. But, yeah, you know, so keep listening. And Lila is, she's a pretty hip lady. You know, when they put the music on, even for, you know, Viola's music, she was dancing and grooving to that music, and I was surprised because I didn't think you were supposed to groove to your opponent's music, but she's so hip, she's beyond all that. She was just, you know, grooving away.
Well, Charlie, you know, the thing that is consistent with the lovely Lila Lodge is that she wears a tiara. Now, one of my favorite characters on television, Amy Farrah Fowler of The Big Bang Theory, also wears a tiara.
Oh, The Big Bang Theory is just, you know, it's what a powerful force that is. You know, and I was looking at, you know, I know that there's been scientists on, you know, and such as Stephen Hawking that have been on the show, you know, and so it kind of reminds me, I was looking last night at, you know, what actors have been, you know, wrestlers like Roddy Piper we were talking about. And what I didn't realize was, and I missed this show, I watched Star Trek Voyager. And you know what I'm about to tell you, right? You know this story I'm about to say? You know, QT, are you hip to what I'm about to say about Star Trek Voyager? When 7 of 9 went up against The Rock Johnson.
Oh,
and
yes.
Battled in a, and somehow I had missed that show or forgotten about it. I don't know how I could ever forget that, but I saw it again. And of course The Rock, you know, has a huge acting career now, but I still don't think he could touch Roddy, you know, in the one movie where he had a great director and just let him go, you know, let him do his thing. But The Rock's getting better all the time, of course, because he's in so much stuff. He's in like 3 movies at a time, you know, and big budget movies. And so you almost forget that he was a wrestler. You know, it's almost like people just think of him as an actor now, you know, that's beef buff. But, you know, you'd talked about some other wrestlers. And one of the guys, you know, that's beefy is that Billy Jack Hayes. Man, that guy was beef, you know. And he would, you know, he'll probably find some, if he hasn't already, he's probably into, you know, some of the action movies. But also Rick Martel, of course, you know, is aka the model, you know, he was built, you know, massive, you know, guy. Now, you know, these are the homework assignments you gave me, so it's really been good to focus in on this. And you know, I'm learning, and I know other people that might, you know, start getting into the spirit of it. You know, but when you mentioned something about blue collar, see, I don't think you should limit it to blue collar, you know. I mean, that, you know, that actually, I would take, you know, a different opinion on that is a nice way to say it. You know, I want to be nicer, even though we're on a wrestling show, we're expected to argue, you know, we're going to take off on each other. We're going to start trash talking each other here in a minute, right, QT? Are you going to take me down a peg, or am I going to have to do it to you, you know? So
well, that depends,
be ready for that, right?
That's how it depends on how good you are in front of a mic. Some wrestlers and musicians have better mic skills than others.
Well, I'm safe here down in, you know, Olympia, and you're up in Tucson. So I know you're not going to. But there was one gig I was at. You know, you mentioned I'm a musician. I was at a gig, and there was this person that came in there, and I think he called himself Budget Deficit.
Yes.
And he completely made a riot out of my show. I had an organ show at the Rhythm and Rye, just to, you know, we kind of made a party out of it. And it was going fine. And this person, I don't know if you know this person, he was caped and masked and everything, came running in there all over the place, just weaving in and out of the people. He came up on stage, grabbed a mic stand, started swinging it around. You know, those things are, this is a murder weapon. Those things. So anyway, what Budget Deficit didn't realize that there was a mic on the end of that mic stand. He was swinging around. Fortunately, it didn't go flying off into the crowd, and everything turned out okay, and we're friends again. But do you ever see much of him? I mean, does he show up now and again at wrestling events?
Well, in wrestling folklore, at least in the Northwest, I remember that incident. And Budget Deficit was rumored to have met you and you were supposed to sing a song called I'm the Crusher, King of the Ring by the Ramones.
Oh, gosh. You know, and you think that's why he totally went berserk at that moment? I mean, could that have been it? So it was really I knew about that. I wasn't able to work it up in that short a time. I think I only had a month, you know. And, you know, for a song like that, you need at least a year, you know, to work out. The Ramones, that's a, you know, that's heavy music. But, yeah. Well, you know, those rumors may be true, QT.
Oh, okay.
You know,
well,
once again, on the square.
Well, we can only hope the budget deficit will make another appearance at the Rhythm and Rye. Yes, or maybe Tipsies.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Well, Tipsy, you know, welcomes all people, you know, and it's a wonderful place. It's a newer place. It's been in Olympia for about 7 months. It's on Capitol Way, really right downtown in the heart of downtown, and they have good food there. It's southern cooking. You can get, you know, a po' boy, and you can get, you know, collard greens and really good southern, you know, type stuff. They have, you know, shrimp, fried shrimp. And so I work down there once a week, and they have a piano bar there, and it's a wonderful thing for the community to have. I got to thank my friend Dick, who's the head of Zag Productions, who, you know, he's through promotion and helping me get better known. He helped me get the gig in there, and he wrote a nice article about it, which they appreciated and helped him get off the ground. And he does so many things. He's got contemporary fusion reviews that he does with you know, high-level music acts and new music and original music. And, you know, he's also got Improvisation Nation magazine, which has had hundreds of issues, you know, 160 or so issues or more. And so he's, like you, you know, he's real, has a continuity, and it's something he's building on, and he reviews just hundreds of CDs, you know, every couple of months he's got hundreds more. So anyway, out to him, but he helped me with that gig. But yeah, budget deficit would, if he can put on his mellow self, he's welcome to come to Tipsy and even sit at the piano, you know, right there and converse with the piano player.
Oh, well, yeah, budget deficit might be a little bit out of place at Tipsy's. I'd say he'd be kind of out of place, like the polar opposite of Tipsy's would probably be Piper's Pit, that which Roddy Piper was the host of. Now, I gave you a homework assignment, and it was an infamous moment, like a watershed moment in wrestling history, where Roddy Piper had Jimmy Snuka on and Piper's Pit, and Roddy Piper broke a coconut over Jimmy Snuka's head. I sent you that video. What are your thoughts on this watershed moment in wrestling history that would not take place at Tipsy's?
Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, but yeah, budget deficit would have been right at home at Piper's Pit, I think, because, you know, his edgy nature and everything. But yeah, that was a shocking moment when the coconut, you know, smashed again Snuka's head, and he, you know, went down like a tree, you know. But even before that, I think the taunting and the complete, see, Roddy Piper, once again, I mean, nobody, he has that little crazy streak in him. You just look in there and you know that his mind is just whizzing around. He's, you know, always one step away from going ballistic. So So we miss him. Anyway, the taunting, I think, was almost as disturbing as the coconut incident itself. Now, you know, he had a choice. He could have either hit Snuka with the banana. You know, he had the banana out there. He could have hit him with that. I think he did hit him with the banana first. But then the coconut, that was kind of a coup de grace, or, you know. That and then it took Snook a long time to kind of get, you know, fired up, but by the time he did, you know, Piper was smart enough to get out of there and close the door. He made an escape there. You know, the show was just about over, and he made it out of there. He's no dummy, you know, because Snook, he's massive. That guy could do some damage. You know, so yeah, I enjoyed that almost as much as I did the gobbledygooker video, which is that was a little on the lighter side, of course.
Well, yes, the gobbledygooker, Mean Gene Okerlund, was on site at the birth of this egg. This, you could say, the birth of a dawn of creation, a cradle of creation, if you will. A hatching of an egg, symbiotic with Easter, yes. Well, the gobbledygooker did come out of that egg and then prance around the ring. He even did a cartwheel, and he invited Mean Gene Okerlund to do so also. Now, all you Turnbuckle Turmoil fans out there, if you haven't seen the YouTube video of the gobbledygooker and Mean Gene Okerlund, I'd really recommend that you watch this highly educational video. It is educational, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're a Land Before Time fan, you know, remember that old animated thing where the, you know, these giant eggs, or I don't know how long they had the egg, you know, around, maybe for a month or something, you know, and they had the egg there, and then finally when it was ready to hatch, what came out, they didn't know what was going to come out of it, and the gobbledygooker, I mean, you know, it was basically a big turkey came out of there. But this turkey could get up on the ropes. He could do cartwheels. I mean, it was, it was a little hard to understand what the gooker would say, you know. He'd say something like, quack, 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 you know, and it went on like that. But, yeah, everybody might have their own interpretation of that incident. But now I understand he's more famous for that than for anything else that he's done, you know, the gooker himself, you know.
It's true. The gobbledygooker,
that's the way.
Yes, he is, you know, what he's known for. Yep. Well, Charlie, yeah. Wrestling and music have always had a symbiotic relationship, meaning that wrestling and music go together like chocolate and peanut butter in a Reese's peanut butter cup, or the golden sponge cake and creamy filling of a Twinkie. The rock group ZZ Top, or at least the bass player and guitar player, were guest hosts on WWE's Monday Night Raw, and they interacted well with WWE superstar Chris Jericho, who in turn is lead singer of his band Fozzy, of whom have been around for about 12 years now. Even renowned artist Sidney Lautner has been in the WWE ring with Captain Lou Albano. Charlie, a wrestler's entrance music can set the tone for his match and could make his opponent have second thoughts. For example, when chairman of the WWE, Vince McMahon, was feeling invincible and having his say in the ring, his smile or smirk of self-satisfaction would disappear if the Rattlesnake Stone Cold Steve Austin's music came on. And who could forget the song Sexy Boy when the showstopper Shawn Michaels made his way to the ring? And many Apex stars such as Kurt Angle, Stephanie McMahon, and Jake the Snake Roberts were rendered speechless when The Undertaker's music from Another World or The Afterlife hit. My question is, off your CD, Park Bench Muse, I believe the top two songs that would be most fitting for you if you ever had the chance to don the wrestling tights at Tipsies in Olympia would be the number one track, Juju Getting Out, and track 9, At the Movies. Would you agree that these two tracks would set the tone if you had for your entrance music if you wrestled at Tipsies? Yes.
I'd probably be more likely to wrestle at the Rhythm and Rye. They have a little more room there. You know, they actually even have trapeze acts that come to the Rhythm and Rye. That's a new thing that they have. I think over at the Brotherhood, they also sometimes have the trapeze act come in. But I have a little bit of Juju, just a sample. It's on less than a minute here, that I could play for the listeners and they can make up their own mind. It probably would. It's got kind of it's the New Orleans-y kind of sound where you're not sure what's going to be around the next corner. You want to hear it for a moment?
Are you going to dedicate this Juju Getting Out to Bill Mills? That's what I'm wondering. Is this song dedicated to Bill Mills?
Oh, you're in my thoughts, Bill. It's going to you and to your lovely wife, Sandy, and to Jill, you know, so it goes out to, you know, my dear friends and family. So, yeah, here it is, dedicated to you guys. So that's that one, and number 9 here, since they're real short, I'll play a little sample of that. At the Movies, here it is.
Never eat candy, way too sweet, but when I'm at the movies, it's a trick or treat.
Yeah, I think you're on it there. Those are kind of a toss up between those two. You know, if I want to creep them out a little, then Juju would be the one. But if I just want to hit them with some energy, then At the Movies would be the right choice. Up to you.
Well, Charlie, are there any tracks off your CD Hurdy Gurdy Band that could find their way into the WWE?
Oh, you know, that's a good thought. I can actually come up with that. Let's see. I can come up with a. I think that it probably Demon Rum. You know, that's a little along the lines of Juju's Getting Out of the Bowl. And that would probably be, you know, probably be a good, I'll play just just a minute of it here.
Okay.
Wait a minute, where did it, I went to the wrong, I should be able to navigate my own site. By the way, I really appreciate Dick Metcalf putting this together. He did my website, and it's, here it is, see, the music's right here. Wait a minute, did I go? Oh, here's Demon Rum. There it is.
Lord have mercy, it's 151.
Okay. I couldn't help it. I had to sing along a little bit on that. That's good times. Every 10 years, it takes me about 10 years, I do a new CD. So I have three major productions out and some in-between stuff. I got a Halloween thing that is also pretty good that I'm putting together. It's cover songs, but I've got like hours of this cover music. Do you want to hear a little bit of I've got my version of Jimi Hendrix's Voodoo Child, just a minute of that. I really had a ball doing that live, and I got a good, decent recording of it, you know. You want to hear that, QT?
Sure, I think so, and maybe you could dedicate this moment of the show to Sandy. Yes.
Sandy, Voodoo Child, coming your way.
Yes.
Sandy and Jill, what a, you know. See, she's married to Bill, right? But one of her best friends is Jill, my wife. So it's Sandy and Jill and Sandy and Bill, you know. It's all real tight. And, by the way, Sandy is the Relay for Life team called Laps for Life, and we're on the team, and we, you know, raise money every year for cancer research, and everybody's been touched by that, and we all know about it, and how important it is. So that's coming up, the Relay for Life we do in here in Lacey now. They're having it, but, you know, we have a garage sale and everything. So Laps for Life, Relay for Life, that's Sandy's thing. That's one of the things she does in her spare time, right, Sandy? Okay, so here to you comes Voodoo, little bit of Voodoo Child, Charlie version. Here, I'll put it ahead a little bit. So I was having fun with that, you know. But thanks for letting me share my music on your show. I know, you know, it's a wrestling show, but you're you know, it does have the rock music that brings people in. You know, it gets everybody pumped up, and it is part of that whole scene.
You performed at the Farmer's Market in Olympia.
Yeah, I don't have any dates at the Farmer's Market. I'm waiting to hear on that, other than Christmas. I've got Christmas booked, but nothing else that I know of right now. And I've gone through some changes or something. I don't know. I just haven't heard anything from them. But I do have three dates coming up at the this summer at the Lakewood Farmers Market, and that it's on Tuesdays, and I bring all my gear and we just get it on and just play all kinds of music. It's really fun. People are coming in and out of there all day, and so I've enjoyed that Lakewood, and I've been there for several years now, 4 or 5 years, and it's just a good time had by all. And then I'd also just like to thank, you know, some of these retirement places that I play around town, you know, that's a not an easy gig, and they do a great job there at Bonaventure and Brookdale and Capitol Place. And I go every once a month or so. They hire me to play at those places, and they really help keep your chops up. But also, that's a crowd that is listening. You know, they are paying attention, so you got to have it together. And musicians, you know, they're looking for gigs. Man, if you get one of those, you'll learn something from that gig, and also you provide some entertainment, you know, where it might be appreciated quite a bit. So all these, you know, musical venues, you know, it's we appreciate all the people that hire musicians and have live music. There's quite a few of them downtown, a lot of places I haven't never played, you know. Right near Tipsy, there's the La Gitana has music. I mentioned Rhythm and Rise down there, and, you know, a lot of these, there's jam sessions everywhere. The Pig Bar, you know, has places. So just little Olympia has a lot of music. Just got to know where it is or ask around. Yeah, it's fun, you know. It keeps us busy, and there's a lot of talent down here to fill those spots too. So I'm lucky to be in there and one of the people that does get to play regularly and stuff. But plus, I get to be on Turnbuckle Turmoil. I mean, my gosh, you know, it's life is good, you know.
I gotta tell you, Charlie, some wrestlers will use any advantage they can to gain an upper hand on an opponent. Some will hide an object called a foreign object under the ring, in a turnbuckle, or even down their shorts or singlet. Now, it's often been pointed out by myself on this show that many objects can be made rock hard by dipping the said object in liquid nitrogen. For example, a banana dipped in liquid nitrogen can be used as a hammer to drive nails. My question is, if you ever faced Dick Metcalf in the ring, say for a charitable event, and you were the baby face or good guy, and Dick Metcalf was the heel or bad guy, and he resorted to desperation because you were winning a long-fought battle and his strength was ebbing, could you see Mr. Metcalf pulling a cucumber or banana out of his trunks that was made hard by liquid nitrogen and hitting you in the head with it?
No, I know how I would handle that with Mr. Metcalf. I would say, now, let's chill out for a second. We'll go down, you know, to the corner and get a nice triple espresso. And, you know, he would drop that like a hot rock, and we would be down in the corner getting that espresso and rapping about everything was going on. And then we'd go, oh, wait a minute, we're in the middle of a wrestling match. Let's get back there. But, you know, he's doing so many shows. He goes down to Portland and he gets invited backstage to jazz shows. And he's having a great career now with his reviewing, and people seek him out because he has a good ear. And he's also been very supportive. I don't think I would have created my last hurdy-gurdy, park bench muse, without Dick's egging me on, and many other musicians too. He really supports original music, live music, and improvisation. You know, so I could get him going on that stuff. He'd forget all about the liquid banana or the coconut or whatever he had stashed there, and would be rapping and getting it on, you know, getting it on like that. See, I know how to handle Zadge, you know. I can handle him, you know. Now put me up against some other people. I don't know. I'd be up and over the ropes if I could get over him, you know. So, but, yeah, I've, they always check I noticed the bottom of their leggings. They always check those. That must be a popular place to hide things. Is that, I've noticed that in the wrestling. You know, they don't check around everywhere, but they check those leggings really good, right above the shoes.
Yes, that's the referee's job before the match, is to check like elbow pads and their mm-hmm. leggings if they go into the boots. But one thing I don't know if you know a wrestler named Mick Foley or Dude Love or Mankind all rolled into one, but Mick Foley did not even try to hide foreign objects. He had an object or something called Mr. Socko, which many claim was a sock hand puppet. And he put that on his hand. And then he put this into the mouth of his opponents. And they would have their airway cut off. And they would be deprived of oxygen. And they would submit. Which brings up this question, Charlie. Do you believe that Dick Metcalf, being the ruthless competitor that he is, would copy Mick Foley? And in place of Mr. Socko or that hand puppet, he would use either a cucumber or a banana on your airway to cut off oxygen and secure a shot at the light heavyweight title. Would he stuff a cucumber into your mouth? That's what I'm asking.
You know, like we're talking the high road versus the low road here. And Metcalf, he takes the high road. And that would not include any of that. Now, I'm sure there's people that would do that in order to gain a momentary advantage, you know. But somehow these wrestlers survive these matches and these terrible things that happen to them. And I'm always glad to see them survive that. I know that in the movie The Wrestler, which, of course, everyone knows Mickey Rourke should have won the Oscar for that, you know. And so did the winner, you know. He felt that too. But what a powerful movie that shows the actual, you know, tremendous hits that they take. And, you know, even when you're watching one of the maybe more local shows and everything, like I've been watching with, you know, they'll be going along and you think, well, there's not too much action, and then all of a sudden, bang, they're going to hit the mat really hard. And, you know, like, for instance, you know, the Randy Zellers match and everything. I had one quick question. I know we're running out of time, but do you remember when he was tag team with Ogre, Randy Zellers, and for some reason he left the ring area and he was upset about something? See, so sometimes the wrestlers, you know, they won't stand for everything, you know, and he just left, and then the Ogre lost because it was a two against one. Situation. Do you remember that particular match?
Well, Charlie, I myself am going to have to duck out of the ring like Randy Zellers, because actually this time has flown by and the bell has rung and our interview has pretty much ended. The time has flown by. I've got.
Oh, it really has. Really has. Thanks for having me on, QT. I had a blast. Had a great time.
Oh, okay. I will now hit some of our entrance music on our switchboard. Yes. Oh, okay. And I had many questions, but I will show those to you in another moment, maybe at Tipsy's. I've got them written down. Yes. Okay.
All right. I'll be there Friday and Saturday next week.